The opinions expressed are those of the program host and guest and are not those of WSTU. WSTU does not endorse products that may be mentioned. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited without written consent of WSTU. The phone lines are open. Call in with your questions and comments at 220-9788. That's 220-WSTU. It's time for Stuart Laser Talk with your host, Dr. Tred J. Rezacker.
I'm 5'10" and 242 pounds.
I always say this is the biggest I'm ever going to be, and I said that like 20 pounds ago.
A third of Americans are obese. Another third is overweight.
Obesity is the biggest threat to the health, welfare, and future of this country.
I've always been overweight.
I've got diabetes.
Sleep apnea.
Heart disease.
Everything's hurting now.
It's a lot easier to lose weight than it is to keep weight off.
This is probably going to be the first generation of children who are going to have a shorter life expectancy than their parents.
18% of our children right now are obese.
It's not only health, it's about survival and well-being of the United States as a nation.
You don't crave broccoli, and our generation has grown up craving a Big Mac.
I want to think that there's something better for me.
Unless we're able to control this epidemic, we're going to have an abundance of chronic disease.
All of us have to be part of the solution to reduce obesity.
The weight of the nation is out of control, but we can fix that.
If we don't now take this as a really urgent national priority, we are all going to pay a really serious price.
Obesity will crush the United States in oblivion.
Good morning, Stuart, Florida. My name is Dr. Tred Rezacker, and I am here to carry a message of healing and hope, and that you can get better, you can build your immune system, you can hopefully live better, live longer, have less need for medicine, less fear. I call it life without fear. And it's by following some really basic, simple guidelines, which we all know we should be doing. And it's my job to tell you this again and again and again until some people actually start to will do it. It's funny how much we need to hear this again and again. So here I am. I'm a doctor of chiropractic. I've been in practice for over 33 years. And my message, you know, I always like to say it's my life mission and my burden to carry this message of health and healing. Many years ago, when Earth, you know, when the beginning of time of civilization, there was three evil men that had found the secret to health. And they said to themselves, well, we have this secret. This is very valuable, and we want to profit from it. They want to make money on it. And they said that we got to hide it. We can't let anybody find the secret to health. And the one gentleman decided that he said, you know, let's hide it at the top of the highest mountain. They'll never look there. And the other one, the second one goes, no, they're going to go to the mountain someday. He said, let's put it at the bottom of the ocean. We'll sink it so no one will ever go there. And the third one said, no, they're going to explore the oceans and the mountains. He says, I have a much better idea. Let's hide the secret to health within each and every person. They'll never look there. Right? And that is so true today more than ever. That is the truth, you know. The secret to health is within you. You are given this ability to be healthy. You don't have to belong to an insurance plan to access it. You don't have to go to a doctor in a white coat in a big building with glass windows and big counters to receive it. You don't have to be extra special. You don't have to know God. You don't have to know anybody personally to get health. You know, it's not a privilege. It's something which is God-given. It's as sure as the grass is going to grow every single year. It's like love. It's perennial. You know, it's always going to be there. It's always going to come back. And your body's ability to heal, to repair itself, to resist infectious diseases, to survive, you know, is far greater than anyone has really allowed you to believe. And that statement back in the 90s, 94, I think it was 94, 95, I was at my chiropractic convention in New York State for the New York Chiropractic Society. And when I went into the, it was in Mineola. It was in a big complex there at the hotel. And they had a huge sign above the stage. It said, "Your body's ability to heal itself is far greater than anyone has allowed you to believe." And beliefs have a lot to do with decisions we make. What we hear, what we're told, what we believe has more to do with health and healing than your own body's ability to, because you can stymie healing. You can stop the body's processes through intense thought. Just like you can heal your body with prayer and imaging and visualization and going to doctors or finding someone to help you change your rhythm to be healthy, you can do the same thing. You can be detrimental to your health and healing through your thoughts and ideas and what you feel is the truth. And, you know, we're in an information war. I mean, there is a war for your mind. There's a war for your actions and your beliefs. And there's a whole bunch of people, groups, organizations that benefit by keeping you thinking something that benefits their own ideas, their own images, you know. And it's control. And it really, really ticks me off when I see it. Because as a doctor, you know, I've studied infectious disease. I am an authority on it. I learned it in college. I've practiced it for many, many years in my office. And, you know, I always like to highlight things about infectious disease because there's a lot of fear right now about this COVID. It's all I'm reading about. And I want to make something clear last week when I had talked about the testing. You know, there's two types of testing that are out there. There's the PCR test, which is the one with the nasal swab. And then there's the antibody genome testing, which is where they do the blood work, and they have to do a genetic test. And I had mentioned that the PCR test was nonspecific. Well, I was wrong about that. The PCR test, the nasal swab, is the specific one for the protein of COVID-19. It shows if you're actively infected. The genome test, which looks for antibodies, is the nonspecific one. I just want to be clear on that. But either way, this testing is becoming rampant. They're testing a lot of people. And, you know, every single day it seems to be the headline is that there's new positive tests, that more people are infected, And it's scary when you see that because, you know, when I went to school many years ago back in the 80s and I learned about infectious disease, there was a class about the plague and about hepatitis and all of these diseases. And I thought that if you got this disease, you were going to die. I mean, that's what they seems that way in all of these classes. And when you heard about the whole community getting the bubonic plague back in the 1600s, and you're like, well, did everybody get it? There was people that didn't get it, that were asymptomatic, people that were resistant to the plague, or they received it, they had the infection, but they didn't die from it. And I always thought to myself, I want to be that asymptomatic person. I want to be the person who could walk through the pestilence and through the disease and through a viral pandemic and not be the one to die from it. That doesn't mean that. And then I realized and learned over the years that these people that can be resistant to it, they do get the disease. They can be infected with whatever is the latest craze. There's a lot of them out there. And that for some reason within their body is an ability to resist it, to handle it, and whether it's building antibodies to it. And then, you know, they can then walk through the earth without fear of those problems. And I said to myself, as a young chiropractor, doctor, that's what I want. I want to be the resistant one. I want to be the one who's going to be asymptomatic. I didn't realize how much work it entails to be that person. When you're younger, it's pretty easy. You know, that's why younger people are so, you know, they don't get sick the same as older people. As you get older, there's things happen, you know, your life changes. I think we're becoming very clear about that these days with COVID. So I was reading about all of these COVID deaths. I'm sorry, not the COVID deaths, the COVID infections and how high it is. And they're starting to lock people down again and lock down our economy and everything else. And I just want you to feel a little better about the state of Florida. You know, the state of Florida is a wonderful place to live. The sunshine and the fresh air and the not being so condensed together has been very beneficial for not dying from infectious disease. Places that are highly populated, places where there's not a lot of fresh air and they live very, very close together is probably the biggest risk for pandemics because it can spread so quickly. So they have this statistic. Now, you know that these COVID infections are rapidly increasing. I'm seeing 5,000 and 10,000 new cases a day in certain states. And it's scary to realize that. But what they're not telling you is they're not telling you how many of those active cases have become infected and have symptoms. They're not telling you the symptomatic ones, just the fact that people are being tested. So one of the stats they use to determine is deaths per 100,000 people. So there's some great statistics on it, and this is from the CDC, and this is a statistical analysis as to how many COVID-19 deaths are in the United States as of July 6th, state by state. And the only way to really just to understand this is to compare it towards 100,000 people. So the number one state in America right now that has the most deaths per 100,000 people is New Jersey. New Jersey has 171 COVID deaths per 100,000 people since the beginning of it, you know, as of July 6th. New York is number two at 166 per 100,000. Connecticut is number three at 122. Massachusetts is at number four at 119 per 100,000. Now, do you know where Florida is? Florida is 27th on the scale, and we've had 17 deaths per 100,000 people as of July 6, 2020. So 17 out of 100,000. Remember, New Jersey and New York, they're close to 160 to 171 per 100,000. So what that tells you is, even though there's a lot of infections, people saying that we have all these positive cases, the fact is they're not related. They're not equaling the amount of death, which is what I'd really want to know. I want to know how safe it is. You know, I believe that over time, at least this is what they tell us, that we're all going to, many of us are going to be carrying this COVID, and we're going to be exposed to it, and our body's going to fight a response to it. Some will show symptoms, some won't. And then what happens is then you're good. So my other question was, how long are you contagious? Because what I'm really concerned about is somebody who does not appear to be sick, who has been exposed, and they can actually spread it to somebody else to be contagious, which is this whole basis behind the masks. You know, this is why they want healthy people to wear masks and to have social distancing, because of the risk of contagious being not symptomatic. They don't show any symptoms and they could infect other people. So, this is from the CDC again. So what it says here is that if you've tested positive for COVID, this is someone who has tested with the PCR test or has symptoms, don't leave your home unless you need medical care. Wear a cloth face covering over your nose and mouth. And if you must be around others, even at home, But how long should you keep taking these precautions after you've recovered from the coronavirus? Infectious disease expert Amesh Adelaja, medical doctor and senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, tells that someone who has COVID-19 stops being contagious approximately 10 days after symptom onset, or after 3 days without a fever. So you're about a 10-day window, if you prove positive, where you could actually pass it to somebody else. That's only about 2 weeks. And this is in line with CDC's recommendation that a person diagnosed with COVID-19 can be released from isolation after 10 days from the onset of symptoms and at least 3 days from fever, from the fever going away and having an improvement in respiratory symptoms. So this is exactly in alignment with the flu. You know, the flu, influenza. And yet influenza has been around for a long time. And we've dealt with influenza for a long time. Now, the death rate per 100,000 people from influenza, I don't have it state by state, but the whole country in 2017 was 14. So, and in 2016, it was 13 per 100,000. Now, to go back to that first stat that I told you, the coronavirus death rate in the state of Florida is 14 per every 100,000. That's exactly identical to the death rate from influenza and pneumonia in the USA, in the whole country, at 14%. New York and New Jersey are at 171 and 166 per 100,000. That is a huge difference than the state of Florida. And as bad as the influenza has ever been, and there's more people have died, there's a lot of people have died in the past from influenza. The highest it's ever been is only 53 per 100,000, and that was back in 1960. And from 1960 all the way to 2017, the influenza death rate per 100,000 has just gotten lower and lower and lower, from 53 to the current of 2017. I don't have 18 or 19, at 14 people per 100,000. So that should make you feel better about our governor and the steps that we've taken in Florida. And the media doesn't really, they have this information. I got this off the internet, but it sure made me feel a little better. You know, if we were in a situation like New Jersey or New York or Connecticut or the Northeast, I don't know, understand quite why it's so prevalent up there. This number doesn't take into account all the close togetherness, the health systems, the decisions that those people make to when they go out and social distance. You know, there's a lot of factors that come into play. But I can tell you, in the state of Florida, in this beautiful place we live in, the death rate from infections is very, very low. In fact, it's 27th of the states. And you know who the lowest is? Hawaii. They only had one death. One death per 100,000 is the state of Hawaii. Very interesting. At one death. When you get to some of the other ones, Kansas at 10, Oklahoma's at 10, North Dakota's at 10, Texas is 9 per 100,000, Tennessee 9 per 100,000, Florida's, again, 17 per 100,000. So, and you're only infectious, supposedly, according to the CDC, for about 2 weeks if you're positive. And one of the problems with contagious is that people don't know if they're positive or not. So that's why so many people are recommending that they wear masks, because of the fact that you could have it be shedding the virus but not have any symptoms. And this is where there's a lot of they just don't know the facts on this one. They don't really have all the statistics and data to tell you that, which is why so many people are, recommending to wear a mask, especially if you're around people that have ever been diagnosed with it, which is very, very low in our area, at least. All right. That's enough of that. So don't be so worried. Life goes on. And I think the most important thing you have to realize is that you have to build your immune system, that you need to be working today at building your health, at maintaining and sustaining your health. Health is not being free of symptoms. You know, they ask the definition of health, and it doesn't mean you're free of symptoms, because medications and drugs can help you to be free of symptoms, right? And doesn't mean you're healthy because you're taking the drugs. So health, in my definition, is the ability to bounce back when you get sick. So, you know, everybody from when we're born to when we die will eventually have an illness or some challenge, whether it's a flu, a cold, a virus, whether it's eating some bad food or a lot of different situations can befall us. And your ability to bounce back from it, to heal quickly, to not have it take you out, I believe has a lot to do with how healthy you are. And that's what health is. It's like a, remember those punching clowns that you would, they have the sand in the bottom, they have a weight in the bottom, and they stand up about 4 feet tall, and you could punch it and it goes down and it pops back up again. You punch it, it pops back up again. That's my definition of health. My mother's definition of health was having a body that you don't really know you have your body. In other words, it does everything you want it to do, and you're not aware of it. It goes to the bathroom, it exercises, it goes to sleep, it drives the car. You know, it does everything you want, and you don't really realize that you have it. And boy, I didn't understand that when I was a young person and I had no symptoms. So now I'm older, and there's a lot of things I'm aware of that I have wrong with me, you know, about my body. I have to be careful about my foot. I don't want to strain my back. You know, it's true. So one of the, there's a lot of things you can't control in life, and genetics is one of them. You might have a genetic problem or a predisposition to disease. You could inherit genes from your family that make you, maybe preclude you to having heart disease, or certain neurological onsets, you know, sickle cell, different kinds of diseases which are genetically transferred from parent to children. But I want you to know that of all the diseases, that only accounts for about 3% of the diseases that humans suffer from. And about 6% of that amount of diseases come from trauma, from poisons, from toxins, things that are put on the body, things we ingest, things that have befall you, you know, falling off a cliff, being hit by a car, you know, these kind of traumas to your body only account for, you know, with the genetic, about 10% of the illnesses that we have. The other 80 to 90% is what they call, you know, illnesses which are come from our own habits, from things where, you know, we're not doing properly. They, you know, they're called psychosomatic. Some of them can be created by our thoughts and our, you know, not understanding, and others can be from our lifestyle and our habits. And that would be the heart disease and kidney disease, you know, some diabetes, strokes, cardiovascular clogging of the arteries. And these, over time, can be prevented and corrected through lifestyle changes, through eating better foods, by exercising regularly, by making sure you're getting good vitamins and supplements if you're not getting it from your food, which is hard nowadays, which is why I really do believe in supplementation. There's a lot of herbs and a lot of plant products and plant extracts and that are very beneficial for our health, and you know, they can help you be healthy too. So that's one place to start. If you're looking at boosting your immune system, if you're a symptomatic person, even when you have get exposed to a pathogen, you want to make sure that you're working on being healthy. And right now, the number one cause of ill health, hands down, 100%, is being overweight, is carrying too much body fat day in and day out is really, really bad for you. It isn't that body fat is bad. It's that when we carry body fat for too long and we don't ever lose the fat, this seems to create the health problems that we're dealing with today. And it really goes back to your ancestors and the way that humans were designed to live and to survive. Your body's ability to store calories in the form of body fat has given you an evolutionary edge over all the other creatures that run and crawl and swim and fly on our planet. Your body's ability to store the calories in your body has allowed you to not have to live next to the food. You could have a home or live in an area that isn't right next to the food source. So thus you could be safer and live longer because, everybody knows the most dangerous, all the animals know that the most dangerous place to be is the watering hole, right? I've seen enough shows on Africa TV that, when the water gets less and less and everybody has to go to the watering hole, man, that's where a lot of animals get caught by other animals because they wait for them to come there. And unfortunately, you can only go about 5 days without water. So water is an issue for all creatures. We need water all the time. You need oxygen every 3 minutes. You don't have oxygen, you die. But oxygen is pretty available. However, water is something that can be very isolated in one spot, and a human can only go about 5 days without drinking water. But when it comes to not eating food, how long can we go without eating food? The average human, without any practice, can go about 3 months without having any food. In other words, we have enough stored fat, stored energy in the form of glycogen. We have enough stored calories within our system that will allow you to go, 2 to 3 months without having any food. And if you were somebody who had been used to this, living along, having long winters where you went without food for 5 or 6 months, you could handle that also. And so the way that your body does this is it gives you crave foods that will make fat very quickly, such as sugar and fat. That's the way your body will make fat very fast. Proteins and complex carbohydrates, they don't make fat very fast. So your ancestors 10,000 years ago were enjoying the summer, right? It's warm and, they can come outside. It isn't so cold. And as winter starts to come in and fall comes, there's an abundance of food available, right? The trees are ripe. They're able to eat massive amounts of berries and fruits because that's when they come, is in the fall. And what they're doing is they're bulking up fat for the winter, which is the starvation period for humans. And we might go, 3 months in a warmer climate, but you can go 6, 7, 8 months in some of the colder climates with very little, warmth in summer. So their ability to, you could spend a month eating nonstop mangoes, you could put on 30, 40 pounds. And then when you go into a state where you're not going to eat for any length of time, you're going to lose that weight. It might take you 6, 7 months to lose that weight. And then summer comes around and we come out of that hibernation or that lack of food. And basically we're thin, we're gaunt, and then we eat again. And we put on calories in the summer and the fall. And we bulk up because when we go back into that period where we're not going to eat, we're going to use those calories. This goes back a really long time. And this is a normal occurrence for humans to put on weight and then not eat and have it come off and then put it on again and then go in and not eat because of winter and then have it come off. So what's happened to humans today is we put the weight on in the summertime, and then when wintertime comes, we don't stop eating, or we eat normal amount. Instead of losing weight over the winter, we keep that weight on. And so it accrues. It builds over time. In other words, we're calorie positive in the winter when we should be calorie negative in the winter. And 10 pounds a month, I'm sorry, if you put on, 10 pounds a year or maybe 20 pounds over the summer, and then you don't get it off in the winter because you don't change your eating habits, and then you go again the next summer with another 10 pounds, now you're 30 pounds overweight. And what happens is your body cannot handle excess weight for extended periods of time. If you're carrying around 20 or 30 pounds and it's over 4 to 5 year time frame, it can even be sooner, your systems, your heart, your joints, your pancreas, your blood sugar regulation, your kidneys, everything is taxed to the max, and the body systems will start to break down because of the weight, because you're never losing it. And, this is the onset of type 2 diabetes. It used to be called adult onset. Type 2 was called adult onset. When I went to college, there was juvenile, which you were born with without, with a pancreas that didn't work. And then you had adult onset, which happened in your 40s. And now they call it type 2 because it happens to kids now. It's happening to teenagers because of the body fat. And if you put, so what does that mean? Have you ever had to pick up those 5-gallon jugs to fill up the water cooler? They see them at the Publix. You can put your jug in there and it fills it up with the 5 gallons. Let me ask you, how heavy is that 5-gallon jug? I mean, I know how heavy is it. They're actually 38 pounds. And picture that 38-pound water jug strapped to your body 24/7. Anytime you go to get up out of a chair, you've got that 38-pound water jug attached to your back or your stomach. And then you go to roll over in bed and you have that 38 pounds. And then you have to walk. And unfortunately, maybe that big water jug has moved to the one side of your body more than the other side. So it's putting a lot of stress on the right leg. And you wonder why your knee over 5 or 10 years of carrying that starts to blow out and becomes problematic. That is, over long term, that extra body fat is a killer. And the way, I hope this makes sense to you, because I have a picture in my office and it's an MRI of two people. And one of them is 250 pounds and obviously obese. And it's an MRI of their fat and how they distribute their weight. And on the other side is a picture of someone who's 120 pounds, same age, with very low body fat. And when you look at the two pictures, it's obvious that one is very obese. But if you look harder at the pictures, you can see the health issues which have occurred from carrying that extra weight. And the first one you see is the liver is yellow. When you look at that overweight, obese person at 250 pounds, the liver is yellow. And the one on the left, the 120 pounds, the liver is white. They call that fatty liver disease. And then when you look at the heart on the obese person, there's a white ring around it, and the heart is filled with fat around the pericardial sac. So the heart, and on the one that with the 120 pound person, the heart has no ring of whiteness around it. It's just, you just see the heart. When you look at the knee joints, when you look at the big, the 250 pound and the 120, the spacing between the knees, the tibia and the fibula, the tibia and the femur, that zone, it should be dark. On the obese person, you can't see any mark between them. The bones are touching the other ones. On the one on the left, the 120-pound person, you can see that the knee joint has a nice, clear, dark line, you know, separating the two. When you go down and look at the feet, the ankles of the 250-pound person, the ankle is tweaked to the side. They're walking on the on the inner part of their ankle, and you could see the joint is got to be a 45-degree angle. And then you look at the one on the left, the 120-pound, and the ankle mortis, which is the ankle joint, is perfectly straight and level. This is astounding, you know, and when I go over this with clients and people in the office, and I show them these two pictures, you know, I always say that suppose these people were going, you know, suppose these were cavemen. We found these people buried in the ice, and we did an MRI, and this is what we see. Which one do you think has a better chance of surviving the winter than the other one? And they always point to the heavy one, the obese one, because they have a lot more body fat. And I says, you're absolutely right, but I want you to know something. This picture is not someone who only had it for the day. This is someone who has carried body fat for probably 10 or 20 years. And how do you know that, doctor? I said, look at the changes. Look at the fatty liver. Look at the fat around the heart. Look at the knee joints touching together, bone on bone. Look at that ankle, how it's tweaked out to the side. I'm not making this up. That's just fact. So this is a crisis we're under. This is something which is absolutely just mind-blowing, how many people are suffering with this and really aren't doing anything about it. Or if they are, they're not. They don't really have the skills. They don't have the techniques. They don't have a way of helping themselves. When people come into the office, a lot of times I ask them, you know, how did you get like this? And they look at me like, what do you mean? I says, how did you let yourself get so overweight? Well, it was due to, you know, stress. It was due to genetics. They don't really have an answer. And at least they're in the office and they're asking for help. They realize how hard it is to do on your own. If it was easy, you know, everyone would be doing it. There wouldn't be a $50 billion industry in pills and supplements and, you know, magic items to think you're going to lose weight. You know, it's a huge business without any results that are provable. I implore upon you, if I'm ringing your bell here, or if I'm talking about you and you wonder why your knee hurts, and you go to the doctor and he says it's arthritis and you're overweight, and you look at him and says, well, what does that mean? He goes, well, you're old. People get arthritis. And then you have to ask the doctor. He says, well, doctor, my other knee is the same age, but this one doesn't hurt, right? Why is this one arthritic and bone on bone and that one isn't? Well, it makes sense. You've been leaning on that bad knee for so long. Your back is maybe out of alignment and your body is leaning that way, which is a chiropractic problem, not a medical problem. And over time, it turns into medical problems. We have a saying in chiropractic. This makes a lot of sense. Chiropractic first, medicine second, surgery last. You know, if a chiropractor can help you, and it's safe and sane, you're a heck of a lot better off than if you just go into an MD and end up with pills or taking drugs, because we know how well that works. Not too good. So what I'm doing at the office at the Slim Body Laser Spa is I am using an FDA-cleared low-level laser device. And this is FDA-cleared, is safe, it doesn't hurt anybody. And what it does is it targets the outer subcutaneous fat. When people put on extra weight and it's more than what can fit inside the gut, you know, the visceral fats around your organs, and everybody has visceral fat, and that's really, as long as it's not too much, it's not a problem. But when you overeat for any extended periods of time, it starts to go to the outside of the body. And those are the rolls you see that hanging over your belt. They call them love handles on the side if it's a man, muffin tops on a female. These are the rolls of fat you get on your back, around your bra, under your arms. When you hold your arm out, it hangs down. This is subcutaneous fat. This is outer fat, which is not part of your day-to-day calories. This fat is a protective layer to protect you from hot and cold. It's also where you would store extra calories if you were going into the hibernation, into the winter. It is also where you would store extra calories if you were going to be a mom and get pregnant. So there is a hormonal component to excess subcutaneous fat accumulation. It could be from overeating, or it could be from hormonal changes related to, in females, estrogen, and in men, low testosterone. Which is, when somebody comes into the office and they're in their 50s or 60s and they tell me, listen, you know, I've always maintained my weight. I've exercised regularly my whole life. I understand the difference between proteins and carbohydrates. I don't drink alcohol. You know, I'm limited alcohol. I don't drink sodas. Yet, I can't change. I have this spare tire. I've got this thing around my waist, which hangs out over my pants. I hide it with shirts. And I can't change it with diet and exercise. No matter how many push-ups I do or sit-ups or how little food I eat, this does not change. And this is the hormonal component one. This is the one that has to do with estrogen and testosterone and you know, the life changes. As you get older, your hormonal profile changes. It's called aging. And it can lead you to collect fat in the outer compartment. And since it's not from overeating, although overeating can cause it, that's one of the causes, in these people, that's not an issue for them because they're not overeating. Yet they think it's from that glass of wine I have every night, or it's from that I had a bagel and cream cheese on Sunday with my friends at the golf, and that's why I've got this layer, and it's not true. This is a hormonal issue. It's from high estrogen in females and low testosterone in men. And I promise you, only an outside approach, something applied from outside of the body, is the only way to really change that fatty layer, that pocket of fat. It's got to be treated from outside. Hence, you have liposuction, cool freezing, ugh, fat. I don't approve of that. Hot laser, burning lasers, ultrasound, cavi lipo, lipo ultrasound. You've got radio frequency, radio waves. They inject solutions into it now, or my procedure, which is using a low-level laser. Now, liposuction, which is a very dangerous procedure, carves out body fat by suction, and then they graft fat into other places. So it is not, there was 384,000 liposuction procedures performed in 2003. Now, this was a long time ago. It's even more now. It is not considered altogether benign. In the year of 2000, the mortality rate, how many people died for patients having liposuction, was similar to that for people who die in motor vehicle accidents in the United States. That's about 20 in every 100,000 procedures done by doctors certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery. Wow. The same amount of people can die from liposuction that can die from auto accidents? And this is the thing we do when we want to get rid of outer fat? Not a great idea. Liposuction causes severe trauma to the adipose tissue, which is the outer fat. It crushes nerves, damages vessels, and tears connective tissue. This generates a strong inflammatory response, So the person who's undergoing liposuction is at risk for multiple problems, such as thrombosis, endothelial edema, fat embolism, immunocompromise, infections, local necrosis, which is dead tissue, transitory and definitive vascular damage, and a lengthy healing process. One doctor referred to liposuction as wounds as the internal burn. He stresses the loss of serum albumin as well as red cell mass and the release of intracellular products. That's tissue destruction. These events initiate a giant inflammatory response that creates a fourth space phenomena during the first 3 days of surgery. So this is not, you know, it has its risk. I think everybody's aware of that. But to realize how much of a risk, I don't think people really realize that. So in an effort to mitigate the trauma from classic liposuction, the doctors developed an external laser-assisted liposuction that reduces inflammation and controls pain after surgery. So this describes the technique that I am using in my office without the liposuction. So this procedure that the surgical team developed moderates inflammation, it reduces trauma to the tissues, and promotes subcutaneous wound healing after the liposuction. And so what they did, and this was done in 2004, right? That's when this article came out. This was the first paper that ever described the action of low-level lasers on adipose cell membranes and how the laser gets rid of body fat, which is what we're using in the laser spa. But we're not doing the liposuction, just so you understand. So what they found was that if they pre-treated the area that they wanted to do liposuction for 30 minutes with a red light low-level laser, that it would emulsify some of the fat. It makes it more liquid. It breaks up the chunks in a very gentle way. And then when they did the lipo procedure where they sucked out the fat, they had less bleeding, less inflammation, and a better response because they softened it up using the laser energy. And the FDA approved that. The Food and Drug Administration, when they brought this to their attention and they applied for their patents, they agreed that red light at this power can open up fat cells and make a better result from liposuction. Now, that was, again, in 2006. I think it was 12 years ago. Do my math right there, but you know what I mean. And from that initial approval, a company called Irconia developed a 5-laser lipo laser machine, which is called the Zerona. And this used the technology that was developed in liposuction to pre-treat before the lipo. Now, I use this little story to tell you how they figured it out. So what they did was, when they were experimenting and doing these studies on using this laser before lipo, they asked a bunch of students to come in and they'd volunteer for this lipo procedure. And of course, you know, students will do anything for money, and they're young and healthy. So they come in there and they lay him on their back, and one student took the laser light and they shined it on his belly, and he thought, oh, that's okay, you know. And then they came at him with the stick, the cannula, which is the suction stick. And they wanted to stick it into his belly to suck out the fat. And he was like, no, I can't do it. He got up. He left the study. He left the procedure. Went home that night. They called him the next day and they said, hey, we paid you up front for this study. You need to come back in or you got to give us the money back. He was a college student. And he says, oh, man, you know, I don't have the money. I guess I'll have to come back in. So he comes back in for the second day. And what they did was they measured his belly from the first day to the second day. And that evening, he lost like a half an inch of girth from just the laser without the lipo. And then they did the laser again, this low-level laser again, like my machine. And they came at him with the stick second time. He couldn't do it. and he left the study again. And when he came back the third day, they remeasured him, and he had lost even more inches. And what they discovered as a result of this initial FDA approval, that the red light applied to belly fat releases some of the calories, about an eighth of an inch, all around wherever you put it, and then the body will absorb those calories and burn them as energy, gets rid of them. And if you repeat that every other day for 3 weeks, you can have a 2 to 3 inch girth reduction in that same area that you wanted to do the liposuction to. And that was the basis behind this upsurge in body sculpting and these low-level lasers, which is what I'm doing in my office. There is no damage after the use of the low-level laser. It actually heals the tissue, so it's beneficial. And they had they have these studies where they use electron microscopes and scanning electron microscopes, which are the very, very, can see things very, very small. And they looked at the pictures of the cells before the laser and afterwards, and you could see the little pores form where the fatty acid was released. And then after 2 weeks, the cells had healed and were not damaged. So the low-level laser drains the fat cell without damaging the tissue. Now, the real skill with using low-level laser for inch reduction is the ability to help a person to burn those calories. And that's where the difficulty comes in. Because some people who are very healthy and exercise a lot, they burn those calories like no problem. Some of you out there that have had slow metabolisms, injuries, excess body fat, eating issues, they need a lot more help, which is what we do at the Slim Body Laser Spa. So we're doing free consultations. I can show you this study. It's from Clinics in Plastic Surgery. It's called Low-Level Laser-Assisted Liposuction, the NIAIRA 4L Technique. It's very interesting. It's really truthful, and there's studies on it. I've been doing it now for 10 years, 6,000 clients. Give us a call, drtread.com. You can also go on Dr. Tread's Slim Body Laser Spa, or just come on into the office, walk in, sign up. We signed 2 people yesterday that actually walked in because they realized that we're still open. You know, we're open. We'd love to take care of you. Remember, it's Dr. Tread's Slim Body Laser Spa on East Ocean Boulevard. Hey, and I will see you next week. God bless and stay safe.